We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you and happy Bama Week to you. It is a Monday, November 4 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And an incredibly eventful start to LSU Bama Week. I'll run it down, take your reaction, and give you some of my thoughts as well. As we lead off the program today, for the next 2.5 hours, our pleasure to take you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It is Bama Week. It is that time where I was prepared to run down how much November 5, 2011 meant, how much we thought that early November 2015 was going to mean, fizzled out pretty quickly, and how much anticipation there is in front of what really should be called the Game of the Century Part 3. Just because Part 2 in 2015 didn't live up to the billing doesn't mean that we sweep it under the rug. It did, after all, happen. Whether Leonard Fournette and company want to remember it or not is a different story, but I think this one is going to mimic more of the first time around than the second. Not in terms of the score range, but in terms of the tight grouping of these two teams. That's what I wanted to jump into. And I'm sure we'll get to plenty of that today and over the next 5 days on this program. But the reality is it's been a nutty start to LSU Bama Week. Because we've got POTUS in, Divinity out. Who saw either of these coming leading into today? Not I. And I'll lead with the one that will actually affect LSU on the field. Michael Divinity, senior outside linebacker, spent some time as an inside backer in the early part of the season as well, out of John Arrett, gone, vanished from the roster. I mean, locker vanquished. He's got his nameplate off of that bad boy, not on the website. And then Ed Ogeron just says earlier today, personal reasons. Of course, when the first report came from Brody Miller of The Athletic, coach's decision was listed within that report. And so therein lies the issue. What happened here? And I don't think anybody that's on the record, at least, is spilling the beans. How can this happen when it happened is what many of you want to know, and I don't blame you. I've got a lot of that same kind of scratch in my head curiosity going on. What I will tell you is this. The timing, more than the actual substance and content of what happened, boggles my mind. Because you've got 2 weeks leading into this game. How does this happen on Monday of game week and not sometime last week? Unless an event happened this weekend or that was just learned about this weekend that precipitated the fact that Ogeron and company had absolutely no choice in the matter. And so again, without anybody on the record talking these days, that's what immediately came to mind for me when I saw this huge story that burst onto the scene right before lunchtime, Monday of Bama Week. And so no Michael Divinity. I will tell you that the numbers back up. He's been LSU's best pass rusher this season. Not Kalyvon Chaisson on the other side. Not some of these highly touted defensive linemen, albeit guys in Fehoko and especially Lawrence that have been dealing with injuries. And it hasn't been some of the guys coming up from the secondary ranks like Delpit or Stevens. It's been Divinity that's been their best at getting behind the line of scrimmage. So as you begin to talk picking up the pieces, LSU's defense was always going to be, I think, the bigger question mark of the two phases. Oh, we'll get to special teams later in the week. But of offense, defense, yeah, we all were wondering how this defense was going to defense Tua. And I still expect we'll see Tagovailoa starting at quarterback. Now there's just one other big wrinkle, and it's not good news for LSU. But Ogeron and company, they're trying to pick up the pieces. Here's what O said at lunchtime today. He thinks they'll be okay going next man up.
Caleban Chasol has been taking most of the reps. So Andre Anthony is going to be there. Ray Thornton is going to be there. We should be fine.
That's what he has to say. He probably actually believes that. Do we? And does it matter what we believe? But it's a fair question. If you're going next man up with guys that have been lapped on the depth chart, the good news is they've been around for a while. The bad news is they've been around for a while, and they're not starters. We continue, I think, to just – it's a little bit like – I'll give you this example. 2 years ago, LSU had to go down the line to some redshirt seniors when you went to Greg Gilmore, Frank Heron, Christian Lacouture, and some of those guys played not only legit minutes but gave you legit production. Others, they were just the best LSU had while they were incubating young Rashard Lawrence, while they were getting ready Glenn Logan. Right now it feels like that a little bit. Yeah, you've got some placeholders, but you got to do more than just hold a place when LSU's playing at Bama and you're the number one team in the country. So this is a big storyline. It affects how they get behind the line of scrimmage. I think of those two, it's been pretty well documented. Andre Anthony is probably the better pass rusher. Ray Thornton, a little bit better two-way player. He can give you some semblance of the pass rush, but he's probably a little more solid against the ground-and-pound attack. So, again, LSU leading into Bama week. Its biggest question, well, now we've got a little asterisk, right? A little caveat. Now there's an even bigger question at one position in particular. The good news is this. I mentioned at the top that Divinity spent some time this year as an inside linebacker. There ain't no question there. Between Jacob Phillips and Patrick Queen, LSU's got that area manned. And you feel okay with the experience and the potential of Chasol on the other side, but he's going to have to harness some of that potential in a ball game like this. Maybe play a little bigger than he has for the majority of this season, especially to make up for the absence of Divinity. Now, I also mentioned that with Mike Divinity out, there's the other side of the spectrum. Donald Trump in. I don't blame him for wanting to be there. I think it's going to be hell on wheels, quite literally, for yours truly and anybody like me that's driving into Tuscaloosa that morning. So I'm a little baffled at how something that was already going to be a tremendous traffic nightmare is going to get by with this one. But it's okay. We'll all get through this. You know, or we won't, and it'll be on CBS. That's fine. But yeah. You ever been somewhere before where POTUS is? I've lived in Houston. I've lived in Acadiana when I used to be at that point. It was Barack Obama that was coming through town. I've lived here, and it's been Donald Trump. And, yeah, they shut down every major roadway, as I'm sure you're very familiar with. So how exactly is a game that's usually played at 7 p.m. being pushed up to 2:30 p.m. with everybody trying to fit in that tight window to get out there and tailgate and park and get to the game? How exactly are we going to fit that in and not be able to access certain parts of the motorcade during certain parts of the morning and early afternoon? That's going to be very interesting to me. Again, politically, no comment for me. It could be entertaining that he's there trying to make Alabama great again. But the bigger issue to me is one that is traffic related. And yeah, the game of the century, it's going to attract a whole lot of people. According to the report today, Donald Trump just wants to be a part of that action, boss. And I can't say that I blame him. But for those of us going, boy, we might want to leave an extra hour earlier than we were considering. So Divinity out, POTUS in, just Monday of Bama week. What else can I tell you? All right, I mentioned we've got 2.5 hours of the good stuff today, and we've got great guests that'll prop us up. Gus Kattengill, in exactly 20 minutes, Saints are back off a bye week. What does he make out of this week at Atlanta? And then just in general, the back half of this 2019 season. Gus Kattengill at 4:30. Ruffin Rodriguez talking LSU Bama and a little Cajuns flair as well at 5:15. And James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate looking ahead to week 10 of the high school football season. Which teams are playing for their playoff lives locally and which ones have a real chance at advancing their seeding calls. Big show today, so stick with us. Don't go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we're right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
LSU-Bama week rolls on, and certainly Tigers Tide, the center of the college football universe. But there are a number of other interesting pieces that are floating around right now in that same universe. I want to get to those. We'll do that momentarily with your sink or swim question of the day. A cool note as we come back in, though. For the first time ever this week, there will be an AP Top 25 number one taking on a number two same week in college basketball and college football. We know Tigers tied on the gridiron. How about Kentucky, Michigan State tomorrow night to begin the college basketball season? Just an interesting thing to, I guess, share with you as we continue on this first week in November. Before I continue in our sink or swim question, Frank is with us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Happy Bama week, Frank.
Ben, you and I, you know, we shot words back and forth last week, ending of last week, talking about, you know, no Saints, no LSU, what we're going to talk about next week. Man, Green Bay got housed. The Patriots got punched in the face, and, you know, Divinity did a by Felicia. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. And at the end of this hour, I plan to go in exactly on those two big road favorites that went down, Green Bay, New England, leaving San Fran as the only undefeated team in football. We live in weird times, and LSU-Bama week didn't need more storylines, but we got them, Frank.
Well, how deeply do you think this is going to hurt LSU, and I'm going to shut up and listen?
It's a big deal. It's not a crippling deal. It's exactly how I feel about it. And we're in Cajun country, so I guess I could turn this right. I'll crawfish. I'll walk back a little bit. Some of the things I said out of the gate, Clint has shown me a recent Instagram post from Michael Divinity saying that he needs to take time to focus on a personal matter. Look, I'm always going to respect that, right? So I said in the open that it's something that either O found out about, something happened this weekend. I guess it's looking maybe a little less likely that something illicit happened, but that it's just something he has to take care of. Whether it's something he had a hand in or not, I don't want to speculate any further, and I'm not going to. I hope everything's okay in the young man's life. Obviously, if it were, though, he'd be playing this Saturday night. It's just incredibly odd timing, and it is a big deal in the field. Big deal, but not crippling, Frank. That's kind of how I will term it for you. Because I think without him, they get worse rushing the quarterback. I think you have to move Tua off of his spot to be effective, and especially with the bum ankle. If he's rushed back into production, you want to rush him to the turf. That's the only way to look at this game defensively. You have to blitz, but you have to do it in a controlled fashion. You've got to do it to where you can have some of those inside linebackers dropping back into some zone hookup spots where they can maybe take away those quick slants to those fast receivers. You have to have Jacoby Stevens as the absolute jack of all trade, and they'll never know where he's going to be on the field at a given time. Number three is that important for me this weekend, and so is number seven. But without 45, you get worse rushing the quarterback, and you have to be a little more exotic in how you get after the blitz. To me, that's the biggest deal here. That plus some senior leadership in that huddle. And those are hard things to replace. It ain't like LSU replacing Devin White for the first half of last year's Alabama game, but it is a big deal. They can overcome it. The next men up are going to have to play above their station. You're going to have to see the combination of Andre Anthony and Ray Thornton play better than they have to date in purple and gold uniforms. So I think that's the answer, and that's where I would steer you right now. All right, I'm going to steer us into our sink or swim question of the day. We've been talking LSU-Bama, and we'll continue to, but I don't think we want to overlook this next talking point. Exciting and in light of everything that happened this past weekend, here's my question for you. Which of the following has the best chance of making the college football playoff? Is it Georgia? Is it Oklahoma? Or is it the Pac-12? Because I think I might have written some of those off perhaps a little too quickly. I hope I did. I hope the Pac-12 doesn't have a seat at the table. So much of what I not only think will happen, but want to happen, is predicated on exactly that. But you look up and suddenly, Oregon, number 7 team in the country via the AP poll. Utah, the number 8 team in the country after holding off Washington. is the Pac-12 dead in the water like we thought they were? Don't forget, this time next week, we'll be looking forward to the first batch of college football playoff rankings that are shoved down our throat in an hour and a half long release party show. Thank you, Mothership. But Oregon, Utah at 7-8, are they dead? Oklahoma at number 9, ditto. And then Georgia, after winning the cocktail party, they benefited the most this weekend. They're up to number 6. So what I'm asking you is this. While we all keep an eye on the Big Ten, they've got a couple of teams that are up there in high cotton territory. Ohio State, Penn State, 3-5. We're watching the Big Ten. We're watching Clemson at number 4. Out of the next up, which has the best chance of making the college football playoff? Call us up. Let us know what you think. 706-0111. Clint, you are wearing a burnt orange Texas shirt. So your team right now is, well, not in the top 25. You and Danny Jones will have to live with that. But of the options I just gave you, which do you think has the best chance?
I think I got to stick with the Big 12 now that you brought that up, Ben. So I'm going to go with the Oklahoma Sooners. I think this largely has to do with the fact I feel like the Pac-12 is obviously going to probably cannibalize itself at the end of the day. We see them on their way out in the college football playoff contention. Georgia is the more interesting one because of the fact that they have that SEC championship game that they feel like they're just going to be streamlined towards over the next few weeks, and they're going to build towards that. And that's probably going to be a second loss on the record, regardless of if it's LSU or if it's Alabama. So Oklahoma, to me, feels like the team that's got the lock, because the only other team that's really going to bother them in the Big 12 is Baylor in 2 weeks' time. But Baylor barely beat West Virginia last week, and who knows, maybe Baylor could lose to TCU over the weekend.
I think Georgia has the best opportunity of everybody I just mentioned, but I'm not sure they're good enough. You know what I mean? I think that their path is the best, but I'm not sure they're good enough to pull it off. Dogs were impressive, mostly in the third quarter, in holding off Florida and winning the cocktail party. What's interesting about Georgia, Clint, you realize that they could lose to Auburn in a few weeks, beat Bama, and they're still going to get in. A two-loss Georgia team that beats Bama is getting in. The champ of the SEC is going to make the college football playoff. That's as written in stone to me as anything I could ever share with you. And I think it's going to apply to every single year. Case by case, won't matter. The SEC champ in Atlanta is getting in. And so Georgia just bought two games with that win over Florida, because now they can lose in an East-West showdown with Auburn, go to Atlanta, beat Bama, and they're in. Again, I don't think Georgia is showing enough to make me believe they're good enough to pull it off. So I think Georgia may have the best path and opportunity, but I think the team that might be able to put it all together, right, live up to the promise and have the opportunity, it pains me to say it, I think it's Oklahoma. So Georgia, for me, has a great path, a great chance. I don't know if they'll live up to it. The Pac-12, I'm with you, Clint. They're making a late push here, but I don't think they'll stay in it. They're in it in early November. They'll be out of it in early December. Oklahoma, for me, is the answer here, because I think they've not only got the path, I think they actually have the talent to win these games. Baylor, whatever it may be then in the Big 12 title game, is it a rematch with Texas? Don't know. I think that right now we're looking at an opportunity where Oklahoma and Baylor could actually play twice in the next 4 to 5 weeks. So I love Oklahoma's chances of rebounding. And don't forget, that also puts into play the notion that Jalen Hurts could be right back up there with Joe Burrow as Heisman Trophy finalist. Now, there are a couple of other worthy combatants that are starting to really throw their hat into the ring, but just throwing that out there. I wanted to have a conversation. LSU-Bama, we know. The winner of this one is not only going to Atlanta, they are your runaway freight train number one seed in the college football playoff, or at least coming down the stretch of November, they'll be locked into that leader in the clubhouse spot. The loser of this one, depending on how the game goes, probably still hangs out somewhere in the top 4 to 6. Why wouldn't they? Especially if it's LSU with the resume the Tigers have so far. And I'll plant this seed, CD. Give a shout-out to my brother, Luke Love, came up with this, and he's right. LSU will play its fourth top 10 team of the season on Saturday. They're going to take on, if they were to win this game and get to Atlanta, Georgia, which has every opportunity of being a top 10 team. They are right now. That would be LSU's fifth top 10 team of the season. You go to the college football playoff, you've got an opportunity to play two more. Clint, do you think anybody's ever – this is an Elias Sports Bureau question, but I feel like I could probably guess the answer without having to do the legwork. You think anybody's ever played seven AP top 10 teams in a single season? I'd be willing to bet the answer to that question is hell no.
Oh, exactly. That's where I'm at, too, because there's no way anybody would be scheduling that many top 10 teams, especially in non-conference.
It's not only about the scheduling. It's about the opportunity to play 15 total games, right? And so since we've had this and-one format, the college football playoff format, no chance anybody's ever played seven games like that. Could legitimately happen to LSU. Seven different top 10 teams is actually a possibility. LSU likely at this point, if they advance to Atlanta, won't see Florida anymore, so they won't repeat there. And we'll see if LSU would match up with Bama again. Distinct possibility, but it's not guaranteed. Just floating that out there as we take a look at college football. LSU-Bama looms so large in the entire picture. All right, we're halfway home in our opening hour. Gus Kattengill, when we return, we'll flip it over to the Saints coming out of a bye week. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming your way on 103.7 The Game.
Shown good.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
It's a out of a bye week edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, having our man Gus Kattengill aboard, and let's not waste any time. Gus is waiting for us aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. He just got done doing 3 hours in New Orleans, the Sports Hangover on ESPN 100.3. Thanks for 10 more minutes, Gus.
You have a good day.
Thank you.
Hey, Gus, you with us, bud?
Hello?
Hello, Gus.
Yeah, hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Doing fine. Clint, let's get Gus set back up. Let's see if we can't get him on a little better audio track there. That'd be good. And we'll talk a little Saints again. Coming out of a bye week, an opportunity to play their second game with Breeze back at the helm. And maybe Alvin Kamara will join him in this Week 10 home affair against the Atlanta Falcons. Still kind of wild to consider that the Saints are 12.5-point favorites. All right, we'll try again. Let's get back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Hey, Gus, how are you today?
Hey, man, how's it going, man?
All right, we got you loud and clear. What was the most important part of this bye week for the Saints?
Just sitting back watching, being healthy, and actually winning on the fact that a couple of teams that have similar records, Ben, have won. They actually gained some stuff in the standings.
All right, Gus, Clint, we're going to have to do this another time, bud. Sorry. Hate to pull the plug there, but the audio is probably not going to work. So tell him we appreciate it. We'll do that another time. Live radio, nothing quite like it. So we'll talk Saints with you about a bit of an audible. 706-0111. Saints get the rest up. They've got Atlanta coming to town. And now they get to look at a bit of a different NFC landscape because Green Bay lost yesterday. And that is a big deal. I had some of my NFC chatter reserved for our final segment of the 4 o'clock hour. But again, we'll regroup. Packers, a two-loss team now. You look around the rest of the NFC, and Seattle losing would have been helpful. But Tampa falling to Seattle in OT yesterday out on the West Coast gives you even more of a cushion inside of the NFC South. And that, to me, has been maybe the most surprising part of this 2019 campaign. Just look at the crumbling division around the Saints right now. The only other team really, I think, with any semblance of a heartbeat at this point is the Carolina Panthers. And give them credit. They did get a win over Tennessee, 30-20. McCaffrey continues to play Atlas for that team, does everything on the ground, through the air. And so they're at 5-3, still a couple of games back of the New Orleans Saints. But I think you're hunting bigger prey if you're in New Orleans. I think you're looking around the NFC and you get to survey the fact that now Green Bay's a two-loss team. Now the Vikings, who came up just short in KC yesterday, they're a three-loss team. I think you have to like what you're looking at. I mean, the Bears are 3-5. Nice preseason pick by yours truly. The Eagles are 5-4, just barely nosing above 500. You really look around the NFC, and nobody except you and San Fran, I think, really would be considered in a driver's seat to have a bye week opening round of the playoffs. And what have you done? You've gotten Drew Brees back. You won every game while he was gone that Bridgewater started. What else is coming your way? Alvin Kamara. An AK-41, if he plays this Sunday especially, which I'm not sure they need to rush him back for it unless he's 100% or close to it. Alvin Kamara coming back makes you, again, arguably the most complete offense in the NFL. I mean, there's no other way to put it. The Rams have taken a tremendous step back, one of the best offenses from last year. The Chiefs, yeah, they're pretty darn good. Like I mentioned, I watched every second of that game they played yesterday. The Chiefs are, even without Pat Mahomes, I mean, offensively, that's a good football team. And they had the chance to start running the ball a little bit late in the game. They became dual threat. That's a good team offensively. But right now, I don't know if you would like anybody's combination of offense and defense as much as the Saints. And that's not just the NFC. That's league-wide. Because a lot of people will point to that Sunday night game and say, all right, this is what happens when the Patriots play a team with a pulse. I didn't think that they would lose going into Baltimore. They lost resoundingly. And now we've got Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. And I would say that's 1-1A for your NFL MVPs. There are a couple others that could apply. I think before this week, Dalvin Cook was right up there. League leader in rushing touchdowns, rushing yardage, way up there in yards from scrimmage. He had an off day at Arrowhead yesterday. But I think it's those two quarterbacks I just listed, and one of them absolutely gave the heebie-jeebies to that vaunted Patriots defense that we've been hearing about. So I just find it interesting. The Saints, right now, with every opportunity to earn a bye in the opening round of the playoffs. And if they continue to get healthy, I think a whole lot can happen from there. Let's kind of hone in on the AK-41 portion of this, CD. Do you think there's any reason that he has to play in this game? Where would you lean, knowing what you know right now?
Knowing what I know right now, I'd probably sit him because I like what I've seen from Latavius Murray as of late. Make sure you can get Latavius Murray more and more reps. That way you can feel a little bit more comfortable, because it felt like maybe like the first few weeks of the season that Sean Payton might have not been as comfortable putting Latavius Murray out there, having a bulk of the carries. And I think that's what you want to wind up doing going forward. After this week, you're against an Atlanta team that is pretty much putting things in the tank. Matt Ryan likely not going to be playing in this one. And then you kind of move forward from there. I think you need to be able to get Alvin Kamara at least one more week to where he's 100% healthy. And then you can start utilizing Latavius Murray as your bell cow and using Kamara as Kamara knows how to do best.
It would be very easy to take the bait and look ahead to December the 8th. That's the next time the Saints are going to play a game of the absolute utmost importance. And I'm not trying to completely skip over Saints-Panthers Part 1. That is a big deal. But December the 8th at noon is the 49ers at the Saints. Right now, that's 8-0 at 7-1. It would be very easy to say, slowly bring Kamara back up to speed in the month, basically, leading into that one. Because we can look at the Saints' schedule between now and then. Look, they're 12.5-point favorites this week against 1-7 Atlanta. 12.5-point favorites. The NFL is a weird place these days. And parity is, well, it's not everywhere. Saints are at Tampa, November 17. I think we've already seen with Bridgewater at the helm, that's a game where you have to be able to score enough points. With a healthy Breeze there, I ain't worried about scoring enough points. And then November 24th versus the Panthers. Short turnaround, Thanksgiving night at the Falcons, and then you've got an extended rest before December the 8th, and that would be week 14, the Saints' 13th game week of the season, versus the 49ers. So for me, that's the way I look at Kamara. It's easy to say, in my position, ramp him up slowly toward that point. His most significant playing time before that game should probably be the Sunday, November 24 contest against the Panthers. That's the way I look at it. Have him right by the time you're playing San Francisco. because if things fall the way you want them to, that one may be for the number one overall seed. That's a really important game. The Falcons at home, wouldn't bother me if Kamara doesn't play a lick this Sunday. Hate to tell you, that's just how I feel. I was the same guy who didn't want Breeze playing against the Cardinals prior to the bye week. It worked out okay. But that's not a well that I go down too many times, if I can help it. If I'm Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, and I have the luxury of keeping my guys healthy against crappy NFL football teams, which do exist in 2019, and the Falcons are right up there at the top of the list, I'm going to exercise that option. So just a thought. As we replace our guy Gus Kattengill, Gus, take care of that toddler, brother. We understand. We got nothing but love for you. But the show must go on. And, of course, it will. And on the other side of this break, we'll go on to a little more NFL talk, but I also want to give you the opportunity to come back in on LSU Bama. Clint took a call at the end of our last segment. I was talking Georgia, Oklahoma, Pac-12. Somebody else jumped in and wanted to go Tide Tigers. We're not going to deny you there. Not on Bama week. So call us. We'll line them up in the break. 706-0111. And after this timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Like the way offense is putting points on the board. We've gotten better on the line of scrimmage on the offensive side of the football. I feel like our guys have been tested against Auburn. They've been tested against Florida. Obviously, they're going to be tested again this week. I do believe we have better depth on the defensive line. I think that our guys are equipped, and this is the best football team we've had going into this game.
I agree with that last statement. The one before it might just determine the outcome of the ball game. Welcome back in. We'll go LSU-Bama heavy and maybe even exclusive in this segment, depending on your level of participation. So call us up. Let us know what you think. 706-0111. I agree with Ogeron that this is LSU's best team taking on Bama in a while. I think on paper, it's their best since 2015. Don't forget, Fournette and LSU were looking pretty good, flying pretty high, heading into November. And then they got smacked down, and Derrick Henry won the Heisman. I think it's their best team in reality that's going to Tuscaloosa since 2011. Now, the part that I'm not sure about is what he said beforehand. He said he thinks that LSU's defensive line depth is its best it's been in this game in a long time. I think if you're an LSU fan, you hope so. I don't know that we know so just yet. And here's what I mean. While it looks great on paper to have Fehoko and Lawrence, neither is playing anywhere near an all-SEC level clip, right? And I think that's what was, again, hoped for. Or maybe even second team all-SEC, or maybe even just consistently healthy and disruptive. Both have had moments, but both, especially Lawrence, have dealt with injuries this season. Are they healthy, ready to play their best in this ball game? Time will tell. I think, for my money, Tyler Shelvin's been one of the most pleasant surprises yet of this 2019 season. And we were told that in August. We didn't know whether to believe it, his shape, his level of commitment. And those things seem to be coming to fruition. And his playing time has followed. And we're seeing a little bit of Apu Ika that's spelling him. I doubt we see a ton of Ika in this game. I just don't know that they can feel comfortable going down the line with a game of this magnitude in that atmosphere. So I think we've just addressed LSU starters along the D-line. Well, who comes next? Glenn Logan? He's played some pretty good football times this year. Who else is ready to roll? Again, LSU in terms of front line, I don't know if it's the best they've brought. In terms of depth, it could be the best they've brought to T-Town in a while. But I do think that's the biggest thing that separated LSU and Alabama when you take all the mental stuff off the table, which we know it's humongous. There's clearly been a mental barrier between the Tigers and Tide over the last 7.5 years, no question. It came to a fever pitch at the end of the Miles era. Just utter obsession over this ball game. But if you took that out of the equation and you just went X's and O's, Ogeron said it after last year's game in Death Valley. We have to recruit better along the lines, especially D-line. And then that became one of the things we talked about on this show after LSU got blanked by Bama in Tiger Stadium last year. Wow. That's a heck of a statement to make about the guys that are on your team and in your locker room. But he wasn't lying. And so is LSU's D-line in a better place this time around? We're going to find out. Will LSU's defensive line be in a better place next year, the year after? I think so, because the recruiting tells us that much. The way they're recruiting tells us that LSU's going out and getting some of the best defensive linemen from around Louisiana, which this year means they're getting some of the best from around the country. Jaquellen Roy out of U High. I mean, a chance of getting the Guillory kid out of Ash, and then some of the other monsters that are just out there roaming around in South Louisiana. You get those kids, you're well on your way. But I think LSU's picking off of other trees as well. I do believe, Clint, that that becomes the biggest tale of who wins in Tuscaloosa. Is LSU's defensive line up to the task? Can they get after Tua without having to do too much exotic blitzing? Can they stop the run, at least to an extent? That's going to be the biggest part of this ball game for me. And speaking of Tua, hey, don't take my word for it. I want to let you hear from both head coaches. First, Saban, and then Coach O on the availability and the expectation. Here was Saban earlier today. He says that Tua will be a game-time decision.
Been pretty consistent on the message with Tua. You know, if he can play in the game, it'll be a game-time decision. You know, he did practice 2 days last week. We'll see where he's at today, and then we'll manage the reps accordingly. And when I say that, we cannot predict. You know, if he goes out there today and he looks good, then his rep count is going to go up, and we'll prepare him as if he's going to have an opportunity to play in the game.
I will bet Clint's annual salary that Tua Tagovailoa plays in this ball game. I'm not the only one that feels that way. Justin Vincent was pretty emphatic on that point Friday when he joined the program, and here, Coach O says, yeah, we expect 13 is going to be back there.
Tua's a fantastic player, as we all know. Great competitor. We totally expect him to play. Najee Harris is an outstanding running back, breaks a lot of tackles.
LSU cannot spend an ounce of defensive game plan preparation on Jones, Bama's backup quarterback. Seriously. Not an ounce, can't give up a second, can't afford to do it. Go full on G.W. Bush here. Wouldn't be prudent. I guess that would be G.H.W. Bush. No chance. Am I thinking about anyone other than Tua playing quarterback in this game and spending my time prepping for any other eventuality? Because if it comes down that way, well, thank goodness. You can live with that. You don't have to have a lot of game plan for that. You know the receivers are good. You know they want to get it to him. But with Tua, it's a near-professional offense that's running on that side, kind of like LSU's. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Aaron, welcome to the show. We're talking LSU-Bama. What you got?
I just want to ask you your opinion on what do you think it would be crazy if to think that we may see Marcel Brooks get in some of them a little bit more snaps than he normally does, just to – maybe he gets, what, 5 to 10 a game now? Maybe he can take some of those from Andre Anthony and Ray Thorne. I don't know. Let's see if he can play it around a little bit since he's supposed to be the next, you know, pass rush. You know, that's what they bring him in for.
Boy, am I a fan. And that's a good suggestion. I'm going to go on that tangent for a while. We appreciate the call. We can take a few more. 706-0111. Next scheduled guest, Ruffin Rodriguez in 20 minutes. Marcel Brooks from the state of Texas made his biggest play of the season, getting behind the line of scrimmage, authoring a sack of Kyle Trask late in the Florida game to help secure a win. Since then, we haven't heard from him as much. He's been on the field. It was suggested by our previous caller, 5 to 10 snaps. Yeah, maybe. Maybe 10 is what I'm saying. Probably more like 5. I think you can absolutely go down the line to him in second and long and third down situations. I think he's too light in the pants to have in there on first down or third and short or fourth and short. period. If we're debating LSU's defensive line having enough star quality with the starters and enough depth to combat against Bama in the ground and pound game when they decide to go that route, if we're debating LSU having the front to stop that, I don't think you can get lighter with some of those supplemental guys like a Marcel Brooks. I'm a big fan of Brooks. I said that I thought he could be one of the most exciting members of this freshman class outside of Derek Stingley and the running backs. I'm sticking by my word. His time will come. And I do think he'll be the next Jacoby Stevens. Has a chance to maybe even be a better version of Stevens, who, oh, by the way, is playing himself into being a pretty nice NFL draft pick when he decides to leave. And so I think your next Swiss Army Knife after Stevens is Brooks. Can he make a name for himself in this game? LSU fans hope so. And that's about the third time in this segment I've used that H word. That's just part of it. There's some hoping that goes on when you're going to Tuscaloosa to take on Saban and the Tide. But that ain't a one-way street. And you could take some solace before we quickly get to our final word of this hour. You could take some solace in the fact that there's some hope going on from Saban and company. They won't talk about it publicly. They show nothing but good face, and I get that. But down some of their key defensive players from the preseason, they're doing some hoping as well when it comes to defending Joe Burrow in this pass. Not a doubt in my mind. All right, quickly, CD, we'll go no huddle to our final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Please. There have been some reports how much credit there is behind him. Couldn't tell you. But there have been some reports that maybe, just maybe, Mike Leach is interested in the Florida State University football vacancy. I shouldn't have to say much else, except for that the final word of this hour is please. It is the final word. It's brought to you by the Village Station. Of course, they're your final stop to fill up your stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. We're coming right back in, and we'll keep talking sports with you. That's what we do. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway, and it's a Bama Week Monday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back at you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Ruffin Rodri coming aboard in 12 minutes. James Buers at 6 o'clock. Anywhere in between, including right now, we'd love to hear from you. A couple other angles to this LSU-Bama ball game. And we'll discuss 706-0111 whenever you're ready to jump in. The big news of the day, Michael Divinity out and seemingly has taken himself out, removed himself from the LSU football program, saying he does hope to return and graduate in December and maybe even get back onto the football field. So all I could say is it's got to be something incredibly serious if you take yourself out of this equation to have to focus on yourself and whatever else is going on in the world of Michael Divinity with this timing. So thoughts with the guy, but man, it's going to leave LSU in a place where, as I said in the 4 o'clock hour, it's a big deal. It's not crippling. It means that Andre Anthony, Ray Thornton have to step up, and as one of our callers just suggested, maybe it's time for a freshman to lead, especially in pass rush situations. Marcel Brooks. And so Dave Aranda, he's got an awful lot to consider heading into this ball game. And you know what's interesting, and pretty funny as well, Jacoby Stevens, late last week, asked how much Dave Aranda has held back schematically this season. And Steven says, really, he's held back a lot. He thinks it's safe to assume that some of that is for Bama. The exact quote from Stevens, quote, "It's like he's playing cards and he knows exactly when to play them End quote. The funniest thing for me, having been on this beat or some way, shape, form, or fashion, talking LSU sports for the last, 11 or 12 years now, it's hilarious to me when people always write in or call in saying, LSU's saving things up offensively, right? There's a secret playbook, right? There's things we haven't seen yet, right? And the answer is almost certainly and categorically no. They may be setting one big play up, a wrinkle off of a staple. Yeah, that's possible. I take you back to 2010, the D'Angelo Peterson end around. Absolutely, it's possible that your bread and butter sets up something that goes against the grain. Misdirection. No question. But just changing up what you do? I mean, going with oop-de-oop all of a sudden? No, it doesn't happen that way. You are who you are. And LSU's a spread team offensively that moves quickly and sets up its run with its pass and has three great wide receivers that are doing it. And, oh, by the way, an emerging pass-catching tight end. But it is interesting and ironic that defensively, LSU maybe has been holding some things back. And now I think Aranda is going to have to dig into his well of tricks, considering that Divinity is going to be out in this ball game. But there's a couple of other interesting items that I wanted to discuss, and it ties into the injury front. As you heard in our 4 o'clock hour, Tua Tagovailoa, he's termed a game-time decision by Nick Saban. Saban saying that both he and Jones will split reps at quarterback, and that if and when Tua is feeling better and he's looking better in practice, then that 50-50 will skew in Tua's favor. That's how they're discussing it publicly, and that's how they're saying they're going to handle it internally. On LSU's side, Clint, Grant Delpit, not at LSU's practice today, and he missed all of last week. He's dealing with a leg injury. You could see it happen, and he was a little gimpy postgame after Auburn. But Ogeron did say during his lunch presser today he expects number 7 to go. And, you know, one of the things that I've been considering with this game for a long time, how much different will it look and play out than so many other LSU-Bama games? And not just in terms of Bama winning. I understand that's been a predominant theme since November 5, 2011. But the bigger thing is that these are typically knockdown, drag-out games. And we think of 9-6 in 2011. Okay, even for this series, that's a little prehistoric. It's usually played in the low 20s, right? Occasionally, Bama's got a much better team than LSU, and it's played at a higher score for one team. But by and large, this thing has been played in fairly tight quarters, and now we all have this expectation that LSU-Bama is going to be a shootout. And some of our analysts last week, Gordy Rush is one of them, said that he still expects that. I don't. I'm going to be on record early this week as saying I don't expect this thing to be 45-42. It'll be a lot higher scoring than 9-6, but there's a middle ground. I think this absolutely could be a 28-24 type of game. I think that both defenses are going to have their challenges. But here's the thing. Both of these offenses are capable of the quick strike score. Probably Bama a little bit more than LSU. Just because their wide receivers are quicker and shiftier, they're not as good at possession receiving, in my opinion, as Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. They don't offer the take the top off the defense vertical threat, go up and get it, red zone threat as Terrace Marshall Jr. So I think LSU's guys have Bama's wideouts beat in certain dimensions, but not in catching it, taking it, and running 50 or 60 yards. But I think these two defensive masterminds, Aranda on one side and Saban on the other, are going to find a way to force these two teams to keep it in front. So here's what I'm telling you. Even though both teams have great offenses and will score the football, I don't know that they score at will, and I think you're going to see some clock chewing, possession grinding drives. I don't think there's going to be enough possession in this game for either side to score 42 points. Just my two cents. And I'm getting it out there early. Let's go get yours. We'll head out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Shane, welcome in. What do you make of it?
I think you're right. It's not going to be a 9-6 score. Obviously, we're probably looking at 60-70 point score combined. But the thing that won't change is that this game's still going to be decided on the offensive and defensive lines. Even though the score is different, the lines are still going to determine who wins, just like the Auburn game and the Florida game. it'll be determined on the lines, like usual.
Boy, that's a really good comment, and I'm going to expound upon it. Shane, thanks for the dial. And let me tell you exactly what I mean before we take our next caller. Matt, hold on a sec. We spend a lot of time, I do especially, noting that LSU's defensive line is the one area where they're just not ready to compete with Alabama, right? LSU's D-line can't stop Alabama from gashing it on the ground. They can't get after the opposing quarterback. But the other side hasn't always been rosy. And from Jarrett Lee to Zach Mettenberger to Danny Etling, LSU has sent a number of fairly talented quarterbacks with varying levels there, but fairly talented, I think we can agree. Those three guys went to Tuscaloosa and had tail tucked between legs. Even last year, Joe Burrow, who we all recognize to be a good quarterback, tail tucked between legs as Alabama was getting after him in Tiger Stadium. So LSU's O-line will have to come to play in this one, to Shane's point, or nobody has to have a conversation about scoring 38 to 45 points for LSU. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Matt has been waiting. Matt, we appreciate it. What you got?
Hey, Ben, how you doing, man?
Doing well.
Good, good. So listen, I think one of the two of the most overlooked points here is, number one, Alabama is starting four freshmen in their front seven. Alabama has not played a marquee game yet this year. This is going to be a stage these guys have not yet played on against a talent they have not yet played against. So this could be a big measuring stick for Alabama's front seven, okay? On top of that, for LSU, I think on the other side of the ball, it's going to be Derek Stingley and Christian Fulton. What are they going to do? How are they going to match up? Are they going to need help? I think Stingley, I think you put him on an island. I think you take your chances with that. He's talented enough. You let him do his thing. But for me, it's the front seven of Alabama, what they do against LSU's passing attack, if they can slow down Joe Burrow by getting to him or not. And then it's Derek Stingley and Christian Fulton, what they're going to do against those Alabama receivers if they can match up one-on-one.
It's a good call, and I think it's fair. I'll address it. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
And let's spend a little bit of time with LSU's corners, then we'll hit our first break of the hour. I think it's been said already that Bama's got inexperience in their front seven. Talent, sure, but inexperience. He's right. And that's why I think that you have to continue to set up the run with the pass. After you bop somebody over the head with enough Jamar Chase to make them silly, then it's got to be Clyde and Ty Davis-Price time. And I think it will be. I think that is the game plan. Why wouldn't it be? But I think there's one thing Matt just mentioned that deserves our attention. I ain't worried about Derek Stingley Jr. Nobody should be. I think that Saban, Tua, and the offensive side, I think they're going to be targeting number one. And there aren't a lot of people who are going to out and out tell you, I want to go after the senior instead of the true freshman. But in this case, Saban knows all about Stingley. He's been recruiting for years. They know. And they've watched him this year. I think that Christian Fulton of those two is the one that's going to need help, to Matt's point. And I think you're going to have to dedicate some time to it. I think that you're safety coverage over the top, in part, what you decide to do with Grant Delpit is going to be predicated upon the fact that Fulton, in particular, out of those two, is going to need some help. And not necessarily over the top. I'm talking about taking guys down in the open field. Because it's one thing for Fulton to be a half step behind Jerry Jeudy when he's running the slant. It's another thing to be a half step behind him right after he's caught it. Because you ain't catching up to that cat. Jalen Waddle, a couple of those guys, you're just not catching up to him. And so I think you have to have dedicated coverage to the middle of the field in particular for the slant. Because the only team in America that's as good at running it, getting first downs, and then running after the catch as LSU is, if not maybe a little better with the whole run after the catch part, it's Alabama. So that's a good point by Matt. We have to hit our first break of the hour. Ruffin Rodriguez on the other side. We'll pick his brain on Tigers versus Tide. After this brief timeout, we got that and more. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Well, unfortunately, the music is a little misleading right now, but I'll knock on wood, and maybe we can get Ruffin Rodriguez aboard. That is his theme music. We do want him. But, man, Monday of Bama week, I thought it was just crazy before I got to 4 p.m. and started this part of my workday. Apparently it's going to be hectic if you're a guest of my program. So SOS to James Buers, who is set to join us at 6 o'clock. If you are alive, take cover, because we tried to get Gus Cattingill in his normal spot at 4:30, and he was in toddler hell, and he apologized profusely. Gus, you're our guy. Don't worry about it. But Gus literally couldn't talk without the background noise being debilitating. Had a child that just didn't want to go into a car seat. I get that. Now we can't get Ruff and Rodrigue lined up. And, oh, come on, Ruff, we only do this Monday at 5:15 every week for like 4 years. So we'll see if we can't get him your way. Hectic Monday. Michael Divinity out of the LSU-Bama game. Personal reasons. POTUS. Donald Trump in for the LSU-Bama game. And everybody that's driving to T-Town on Saturday morning, and I'm raising my hand, touching some sky here, inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing, oy vey. It's going to be traffic hell. Again, a game that's typically played at 7 p.m., moved up to 2:30 p.m. I already was anticipating having to get up early and pack a lunch for that bad boy, the commute in. Now, I think it's just absolutely going to be nuts. The motorcade to get that man in there. I'm not staying in Alabama. I'm staying in Meridian. I'll just go ahead and give you that much. I feel like that's the best way to attack this bad boy. I'm breaking down my drive after the show Friday. And thankfully, Karen Crow Westgate is Thursday night CD. So, boom, it was meant to be for me to go to Tuscaloosa. I don't have to call a high school football game Friday. But I would imagine my drive from Meridian to Tuscaloosa Saturday morning is going to be quite literally hell on wheels.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be the best kind of ride in the world. Hopefully, we could set the over-under on you getting into the stadium about, like, what, 1 o'clock?
Well, that's getting into the stadium. I don't care about that. I want to get the car parked, right? Have a couple of adult beverages. That's the name of the game. This will be my first time going to Tuscaloosa and not covering the game ever. I've covered 3 of those games.
And you're all kind of jazzed up about that, aren't you?
I'm sure as bleep not sad, yeah. 09, 11, and 13. I covered all 3 of those games. Loss, win, loss for LSU. 09 was a heck of a game. And actually, that was the first LSU road game that I ever covered. LSU-Bama in Tuscaloosa. Patrick Peterson intercepts a ball that he's not given credit for. Tigers lose, I believe, 24-15, if my memory's true. Yeah, go ahead and Google it, you millennial. But I feel pretty good about those digits. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and give me the thumbs up in 20 seconds after you catch up to my brain. So 2011, LSU, of course, wins the 9-6 OT game. And 2013, Zach Mettenberger had to be picked up off of the turf. Hit and sacked, I believe, on his final 3 plays. LSU loses that one, 38-21. You can Google that, too. 2015, I had started doing the show here full-time. Was getting involved with the high school football. It just didn't work out. So I haven't been back to T-Town these last 2 trips. I have not been to a single one of those games where I've entered the stadium having had an adult beverage. Very excited about that. The drive from Meridian to Tuscaloosa now, especially with this Trump news, not exactly geeked about it, but that's okay. Anytime that you're attending something called Game of the Century Part Anything, you understand some of the trappings that come along with it. So I'm excited about it, and I'm excited to see just what the ratio is. How much purple and gold can you sneak into that thing? Is T-Rex kid now T-Rex man, and will he be front and center?
He better be.
Are you going to sneak the girl who screams profanities at LSU basketball games from the PMAC? Can you escort her to Bryant-Denny Stadium? These are all things that I want to know. And these are things that I'll talk about when guests aren't lined up for the program. That's okay. I talk for 2.5 to 3 hours every day. We'll figure it out. And it gives me another platform to tell probably my favorite Bryant-Denny Stadium story. I've told it on the program, I believe, once before. This was 2009. Customarily, the media contingent, whether it's home or away, is allowed to take their credential and go down to field level. Now, at some of these mega games, like Saturday will be, when you have 100, 150-plus recruits, the sidelines are so saturated that they don't love it when you come field level prior to the game. But, you know, usually they don't tell you boo about it. I'll never forget, as long as I live, leading a group of people down there. It was like me, Shea Dixon, our guy Hunt Palmer, and we didn't think we were doing anything different than we do every Saturday. We're just going to go down to the field. We're going to shoot some video where we can. We're going to talk to some coaches and recruits where we can. And then we're going to go back up, tweet about it, and the game will start. SOP, standard operating procedure, people. Not this time. And we tried to go down field level. We got to the gate, Clint. And a guard there that generously, I will say, weighed 350 pounds, embodied the state of Alabama as much as one man can. I was in the front of this group, and he basically said, well, what do you think you're doing? I said, well, we go field level every single game. We do that every stadium we go to. And he literally dip spit within inches of my shoe and said, boy, this ain't anywhere. This is Bryant Denny.
That's awesome.
I had a deliverance moment in Tuscaloosa, and a battle line was drawn for me. And from that point on, I don't care if I'm going to Tuscaloosa, if I'm going to Gainesville, covered a couple games there as well. Doesn't matter where I'm going. Stark Vegas, head on a swivel time, brother. I know where I'm at. I know my surroundings. And I know that even as media, I am not welcome in the place where I am going. And so I got to tell you, it took me a little while to get out of that head on a swivel mentality. So when I started calling these Karen Crow games, you know, your boy's out there going to like Bill Dotson Stadium, right? Head on a swivel. What's going on? And they're like the nicest people of all time, right? So shout out to David Lejeune, Matt McCullough and company. But it's kind of how it was for me, right? After the Bryant Denny dip spit situation, I'm just ready to go, right? I hate to go full out Romeo on you here, but if it's got to be the hands, you're going to get the hands. But you're not going to dip spit on my shoe like that. We can't have that.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's like, I honestly feel like, you know, and you brought up Rome. That's one of the reasons, as he puts it, to go.
We'll continue the Rome-isms. This is not a big Bryant Denny house.
No, it's not. Not at all. Not at all.
Not even a little bit. It's a heck of a place to take in a game. They were one of the first in the SEC, if not the first, to really wrap their arms around piping and sound. And I understand that they're going to mimic what we saw from Georgia-Notre Dame, and it's going to be like a black and red discotheque prior to the game.
I don't like that.
I don't think it's going to play as well in the daytime, brother.
No,
I'm going to suggest that part as well.
No, it will, but I'm just saying I don't like the idea of it at all to begin with, because I was, and it was something I also kind of noticed last night during Sunday Night Football. That was annoying as well, just how it's like the black and then it lights out, lights on. It's like it gets annoying at a point.
And I'm not even prone to epileptic seizures, but
the same here. It's just frustrating.
So I'm just telling you, it not messing up my vertigo or anything like that. It's just not exactly my cup of tea. I get spending the money on it, but hey, I guess if you're Bama and the kids are paid for, then you could spend some money on other things. And boom, we'll call that pre-shade. We got the full thing coming around the bend on the other side of this break. I do want to talk Raging Cajuns moving to 6-2. We'll catch that at the end of this hour. And if James Buers is alive, if he doesn't succumb to the same fate of Gus Catton going rough and Rodriguez, we'll talk to him at straight up 6 o'clock. But the week after Halloween, I think my guests need to beware and really take care. After this timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Your NBC Sports Radio update starts now.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
The gift of live radio. It giveth, it taketh away. And, hey, we missed out on Ruff and Rodriguez in the last segment. We got him back right now. It's our pleasure to bring him aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ruffin, how goes it on your Monday?
Oh, man, just another beautiful day in the neighborhood, the Bama week. So it's just chaos everywhere, obviously.
There's no question. And I'll give you the two chaotic storylines surrounding that game and get your reaction to both. The bigger one on the field, Michael Divinity removes himself from this roster due to personal reasons. What are you hearing? What do you make of it?
Well, he's got some serious personal injury issues. Great kid. I've only met him, I think, once in passing. And he's a fantastic young man who has some personal issues. And that's his own private deal. Look, we all have our own we all have our own personal issues. And I'm sure he doesn't want to broadcast and all that, but that's his deal, and it's a serious issue, I'm sure, and if it's big enough to look, people got to realize he is missing his senior year, the biggest game of his lifetime, so he must have something really serious going on. And I know people want to say compliance, and it's all about him and what he's going through in his life, and you know what, it just comes at a bad time, but his teammates are behind him. After his Twitter message, the fan base is behind him. And, you know, right now it's more important for him to get better as a human being and take care of his stuff than obviously go play a football game. And best wishes to him. And, hey, that's why you recruit. That's why you sign the best players. And that's why you have players to step up. And that's what they'll do.
Your reaction, Ruffin, to POTUS, Donald Trump, saying he's going to attend this ball game?
Well, number one, he's not going to have any enemies there. I think the entire his fan base is right there, man, in the heart of the South. So he won't get booed like he did in Washington D.C. But you know, I mean, I'm sure it's a good political move for him. I'm not into politics that much, but I'm sure he feels. Look, he was when I was playing ball, he was in the, you know, he drafted Herschel Walker, signed him to that big USFL contract for the New Jersey team, the USFL. So he's a huge football guy. And he sees this opportunity. He probably wants to watch, you know, the best two offenses probably in the history of college football is what he wants to do. So, hey, everybody wants to be there. It's a tough ticket.
We'll continue on with Ruffin Rodri. Good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. How does Nick Saban scheme against this offense with Joe Burrow? You know as well as I do, especially with 2 weeks, he's gotten very personally and intimately involved in that game plan.
Yeah, because, hey, look, he's been having a pretty easy time when Coach Miles was here and the predictable, you know, first play, toss dive or whatever that play was, Leonard Fournette, and hey, look, just stack the line and dare to beat you over the top. But now he's got pretty witty coordinators calling some pretty serious plays, Ben. I mean, you know, having an off game against Auburn, he's still beating them. I mean, just this offense is playing at another level, and he knows it, and it worries him, I can tell you. And he knows he has a young defense with two true freshmen starting linebacker, and this LSU offense is ticking pretty well, and you have a running back that's perfect to that offense, and you have tight ends that are catching the ball now, and you have all – he's just worried. He knows all the weapons LSU has will expose his defense.
I think even Ogeron admitted after last year's game in Tiger Stadium, it's the lines where we really have to catch up the most, and I think he even said, particularly on the defensive line, have they made up enough ground in a year's time?
I think so, but I think they did because of the scheme. Last year, still had his fullback, still had a lot of things that we were doing look, against Alabama, you don't want to – when you have that many five stars on the line of scrimmage and stuff, it's hard to punch a team like Alabama in the mouth and think you're just going to beat them and roll over and beat them. And we did a couple of years when we had amazing team, but right now they've been number one in recruiting, the last 5 years or something like that? That's a hard deal to go against. And I just think that this year, the energy, and last year was overhyped. I thought LSU way overhyped the game, and the kids came out and just, they weren't prepared for that kind of letdown. And they got it. They got a huge letdown. And you saw it right from the beginning, and they were exhausted the rest of the game. I think LSU's in a different spot swagger-wise. I think Joe Burrow brings – I think you want to talk about Nick Saban and being scared? I think Nick Saban knows that he's dealing with a quarterback he's never dealt with before, a quarterback that's not intimidated by him or his team. He's got a guy that he would really like on his side. And, you know, and his quarterback is not 100%. And, you know, if you're Tagaloa's parents, would you put your kid out there if he went 100%? You know, knowing that he's got, you know, NFL hopes on the line. And I just think it's a sticky situation for him and his parents. And I don't think anybody's really brought that up. If I was my kid, I don't know if he wasn't 100%. I don't know if I want him to play. Because
and you know, Ruffin, I'll bring this up too. If this were last year, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Jalen Hurts would start this game, but they don't have that luxury anymore.
Exactly, exactly. And they don't have the luxury, and that's why I just think it's sad that they're going to do that to the kid. If so I know nothing about his injury except for the surgery on the ankle. But it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound very good. It doesn't sound like it's an injury that, oh, yeah, you know, a little rehab here and there. This is a team that they're going to be facing that's going to be hungry and getting after the ball and really getting after everything. And if he gets hit the wrong way, I mean, you never know, especially with an injury like that, especially if he's limping. I don't know if it's a good – look, I want to play the best. I want to play him. I'm just talking about from the standpoint if it was my son or if it was me, is it the smart thing to do? So we'll see.
Our guy Gordy Rush said that same injury took Glenn Logan the better part of 4.5 to 5 weeks to get over. So that's a reference point.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, look, you know, and Gordy understands because we've been through teammates that had injuries, and you want the best to play. You want to compete. You want to do all the things. But you know, we just had a linebacker leave the team to the personal injury before the biggest game of his career. So he knows that he's got to take care of his life, and the rest of his life is more important than this game. And kudos to him. I'm going to just kudos to Michael Divinity for making that decision or whoever made the decision for him, because now it's about straightening your life up. Same thing, basically the same thing with an injury like this with Tua. You know, you got a big career ahead of you. Do you risk it in one game? It's a toss turvy deal. I just think it's a risk that I wouldn't take if he wasn't 100%. He's 100% absolutely. If he's not, I wouldn't take it.
Ruff, before we let you go, Cajuns are 6-2. What can you say about Billy Napier?
Number one, it's all the gamblers out there. They're covered every game but one. I mean, Billy's just making a lot of gamblers happy out there. I know that. All my friends that bet are extremely happy with the Cajuns. They're just playing good football. And the good thing is right now they're playing good defense. And it started at Appalachian State. And I know we lost, but I was there on the sidelines, and defense came through, man. I mean, they held Appalachian State to that low total, and a couple of plays here and there, we win that game. And, you know, I watched App State the other night get beat, but that defense is still solid. It's just Billy has got them playing at a level that pretty darn good, man. Just like last year, get better every game to the end of the season. And, look, win the Sun Belt, still have a chance, I think, right, with the it's a three-way tie.
Their chances of winning it are still pretty good. Their chances of hosting it, maybe a little more up in the air.
Yeah. That's right with the deal, but I mean, yeah, one loss, and App State's got their loss, and just hey, look, I don't see them losing another game because they're only going to get better and better from here, and the system's working. Defense, it's about defense, man. When's the last time you've seen a Cajun defense play this good? The last few games, I mean, they're playing top ball right now.
It's been a long time, and it's been a long time as well since they've had this start to the season. Ruffin, as always, it's great to have you, man. Enjoy your week. Hopefully, it's a little less chaotic for all of us.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, man. It's Bama week. Hey, look, today's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to have a lot more stuff to talk about the rest of the week. It's going to be fun.
Hey, look, I'll be out there Saturday. I'll see you in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see. I'm right now. It looks like I'm gone, but unless my son makes it to the championship game 9:30 Saturday morning, which I don't know if they will or not. We'll see.
Well, see if Trump's got room in the Learjet for you. We'll see you out there.
Yeah, I'm not taking that risk. Thank you, buddy.
There he is. It's Ruffin Rodri. Maybe a little late, but always on time, if you know what I'm saying. CD, here's how we're going to roll. We're going to go turbo speed into throwing shade. So let me remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. I promise you're going to fall in love with the inventory. The standing seam metal awnings, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, it makes for the perfect accent outside your home. It's going to look great. More importantly, it's going to function well. You're going to have the baddest patio game on your block. And for sports fans, who could want anything better? It all starts with a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization. And trust me, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
The coach O used to be the high school recruit O, and he ended up signing with LSU, bowing out and going elsewhere. We know that. But there was a time when Alabama and Bear Bryant even wanted to come calling. And according to Coach O earlier today, boy, that head door was just never open, Clint.
Bear was going to come to my house. My daddy said, nope.
What would it have been like in your hometown and in your family had you gone?
Big. It would probably have been big. I think I forgot the assistant coach that recruited me. And he said, coach, I want to come home visit. I asked my daddy, he said, uh-huh. That's the way it should be. I wish it was like that today.
Shout out to Glenn Gilbo for making an appearance on the show. The follow-up question, but the haunting, lasting imagery from that is the Coach O laugh, which I'm sure Clint has already clipped up for further use. Hey, at two for today. Again, we're going quick. Willie Taggart fired, and the shade doesn't go to Taggart. He's going to be paid in the shade. It's the folks at Tallahassee that, boy, did they sink a little money in? 6-year, $30 million contract. And it's reported that if fired, which he was yesterday, Taggart would receive 85% of the remaining compensation left. Pay this man his money, and that means $18 million. Great googly moogly.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
This show has been bananas for a Monday. Let's throw it to our final break of the hour. I'm coming back in, and I'm determined to talk Raging Cajuns. It is going to happen. We'll follow up on some of what Ruffin had to say, and you'll hear exactly what Billy Napier said earlier this afternoon. So stick with us. That plus James Buers, if he's alive and well, at straight up 6 o'clock. After this timeout, we're right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Well, you just don't have the physical workload that you typically would have, you know. So it's more of a mental reps, mental energy walkthroughs, trying to get the repetitions that you typically would get in a week. Just can't do them physically, you know. Certainly not ready to go do a Tuesday practice the day after a game, or even a Wednesday 2 days after the game. So typically our players are in kind of a rest and recovery mode.
Billy Napier, Cajuns 6-2, but he's right. Different rhythm to the week because they play Thursday, trying to get to 7-2. Final run of the hour for us. Get in. We can fit you in. 706-0111, 31-3 win over Texas State, a homecoming takedown of the Bobcats. And the Cajuns, not only 6-2, but 3-1. And nobody's going to catch them in the Western Division if they handle business. And Clint thought earlier in October, he said, I think that Troy game is going to be tough. Cajuns may not be favored in that one. You want to run that one back? You got any thoughts on that? As we enter November now, the Cajuns are going to be favored and probably by a touchdown in every one of these remaining four games down the stretch.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, except for maybe the ULM game, because ULM is going to be the one is
rivalry
rivalry game, and also don't forget ULM is only like one game behind now after they lost in a hotly contested Arkansas State game on Saturday.
Yeah, and Arkansas State is at 3-2
yep.
in the Sun Belt standings. ULM is 2-2. Again, the Cajuns, the only one loss conference team in the Western Division. Nobody going to catch them, again, if they take care of business. And it's at Coastal this Thursday. You can watch it on ESPNU, then at USA 9 days later, versus Troy, versus ULM to come down the home stretch. On the Eastern side, App State's 4-1, no longer ranked nationally. Georgia State, Georgia Southern are both 3-1. Let them duke that out. Cajuns already have a win over Georgia Southern. They don't play Georgia State. And so that's a bit of the lay of the land. And I'll tell you this as well. Cajuns won convincingly over Texas State. Covered, as my guy Ruffin Rodriguez would have you remember. Elijah Mitchell, 126 yards on 13 carries. That is just steaming hot. And a touchdown for his efforts. Raymond Calais, 21 for 83. And so stand up, Erath and Cecilia. You got some guys that are balling at the next level. Trey Regas, DNP, didn't go in the ball game. And asked earlier today about that, Billy Napier didn't give a lot of commentary about why he didn't play, just left the door open that Regas might be able to go on short notice, taking on Coastal Carolina this Thursday night. Now, Coastal's coming off a pretty big win at home over in Conway, South Carolina. They beat Troy 36-35. So I guess this is what I get, Clint. I open it up to Raging Cajun conversation, and you feed me a guy who wants to talk LSU-Bama. And not just the guy, but the antagonator. Haven't heard from him in months. It must be LSU-Bama week. The antagonator is waiting aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. What you got, my friend?
Let's quit worrying about the mid-majors. LSU's going to trounce Alabama this weekend.
Why are you so confident? Not saying you shouldn't be, but explain to me why you are so confident.
Because they ain't seen an offense. They ain't played a tough team like this all year long. We done beat three top 10 teams, and we're fixing to add another one to the equation.
Okay. I like it. And enjoy your game week.
We sure will. It's good talking to you, Ben.
It's you too, man. It's good talking to you as well. I do like having the antagonator here. I remember way back when we did the summer – when we did that rival series.
Rival rant series?
Yeah, and our guy, the antagonator, was great for that. He's called in. He's got no love for the Raging Cajuns there, and I'm not going to sign off. I won't co-sign that part. But he thinks LSU's going to roll. And he signs off with, it's good talking to you, Ben. It's good talking to you, too. We're going to take all comers. So far, a lot of fun on the program today. Gus Kattengill, well, he couldn't talk to us because he had a toddler in the background. Ruffin Rodriguez, he pushed himself back 15 minutes on the show. I don't know what's going to happen next to James Buers. I do know that it's old boy's birthday, so maybe he's blowing out some candles and doesn't have time for us. I guess we're going to find out. James Buers, then a little more LSU-Bama talk to get you through to Monday Night Football at 6:30. Stick with us. We'll be right back in. Final 30 minutes, Bumper to Bumper Sports, Bama Week Edition on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Back in with more of the good stuff. We've got your third and final hour on a Monday. Yeah, it's Bama week. Yeah, the Saints are back in action. The Cajuns have a chance to do some pretty special things. But as we come back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game, we get our prep football flair on every Monday in the 6 o'clock hour. So let's not waste any more time. And by the way, Ben Love, Clint Domang with you here aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He is James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. James, great to talk with you. We got to share a press box again this past Friday, so life is good.
Yeah, it was, man. It was an entertaining game Friday as well, so
It was a good one to be a part of, and glad I got to do it with you and Blaine.
Blaine and I have now been to three straight homecoming affairs. We had Carencrow versus Northside, Abbeville versus Carencrow, and then last week STM versus Carencrow. So if you want to go to a super long game and you want to see a young lady crowned, you just follow me and Blaine. And James, you're around for a lot of those games too.
Yeah, no, fortunately, the first half Friday was actually pretty quick considering Carencrow dominated by time of possession. So I think it made it a little bit easier than it normally would be for a homecoming game. But still, you know, the homecoming festivities, you know, no offense to the young women who are honored for that, but it does drag the game out a little bit.
I don't think there's any question about it, James. Let's get to what's happening between the lines and with these young men that are playing the game. And we'll get back to Carencrow momentarily, but there's another result that I want to pick your brain on, and that is a huge resounding home win for Como over Southside. I still think there's a good chance both of these teams get into the Class 5A playoffs, but the way Como played, boy, they inspired some confidence. Maybe a talented team like that can do some things once they crash the door and enter the playoffs. So give me your breakdown of that game and what comes next for both the Spartans and the Sharks.
Yeah, terrific victory for Como. And you know, I wrote in Sunday's, you know, our Prep Rewind section that Les Miles might describe the way Como played on Friday as a want for victory, because it wasn't just that they needed to win to lock themselves up a playoff spot, but also they just flat out wanted to beat Southside. You know, a lot of the kids on Southside's team were former Como players. So a lot of their teammates are now at Southside. So, or former teammates now at Southside. So there was a certain level of, you know, just an extra edge they had about themselves in going into that game. And it showed on the scoreboard and in the box score. I mean, for them to run for over 500 yards and Malik Neighbors got a pick six. I mean, what he's been doing at the receiver position has been incredible this year. But for him to also, you know, go in the secondary and get two interceptions and one and returning one for a touchdown says a lot about what kind of overall football player he is. But, yeah, you know, I think it kind of shows that Como is starting to build some momentum. And you know, we've talked about it before in previous years how Como, you know, whenever it seems like they get a big win and build a little momentum, they kind of come back down to earth, and that's where the reputation of them kind of being inconsistent comes from. But it seems like this year they're kind of flipping the script a little bit. They are, you know, after beating New Iberia, which was a big win for them at the time because they hadn't beaten New Iberia since the mid-2000s, so it was a big deal for them to win that game, even though New Iberia's been struggling this year. But come off of that win and then get a big win over Southside, it shows that this team might be a little bit different, and they had all the talent in the world. You know, several kids on that team could end up playing at Division I schools. So, for Como, it puts them in position to not have to play a top five seed in the playoffs because, you know, let's be frank, if you get into the playoffs and you're number 30 seed, number 31, number 32, and you're having to play, you know, one, two, or three seed, it's not even almost worth making the playoffs because you're probably going to lose in the first round. But for Como, if you happen to play, you know, an 8 or 9 seed, then maybe you have a chance of upsetting that team. So a really good win for Como and says a lot about what kind of team they are this year as opposed to previous years.
As for the Sharks, just to confirm, you believe no matter what happens with this Week 10 game home against Nish, is Josh Fontenot and company, are they in?
I think they're in. You know, again, though, I do think they would do well by winning this game just to avoid being like, you know, the 31 or 32 seed. I mean, because I thought was going to be Como's issue, but it seems like now it might be Southside's issue if they were to lose this game. Now, if they win, I think they're in, and they're probably somewhere in the 20s and, you know, would avoid an Acadiana or a West Monroe in the first round. But I do think they're in, but I think they need to win this game just to make themselves feel a little bit more comfortable.
He is James Viewers, prep sports writer, and he puts a blanket over the Acadiana area for the Acadiana Advocate. All right, now we'll start to look forward. And for me, Week 10 starts early. We get a treat from the open-air Crow Dome, Westgate at Carencrow, a brief scene setter. This one is for district bragging rights and pole positioning in Class 4A. We know this right now. If Westgate wins, they finish District 5-4A undefeated. They are the champs of that district. They're already the number 6 seed right now in the power rankings, so they probably would be five or six going into the playoffs. If Karen Crow wins, it's likely to be a three-way tie. In fact, it would be because STM is done with district play. So the Cougars, the Bears, and then the Tigers would split it, and then it's Karen Crow that's got a chance to maybe be a 6, 7, or 8 seed. So there are a lot of different things that come into play here, but I'll get your preview of the game, and can Karen Crow slow down a white-hot Tigers team?
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting if they can because, you know, Westgate, you know, they ended up beating Northside by 30 points, but it was kind of a struggle for them. You know, keep in mind it was homecoming night. There's some added distractions that come with that. Also, you know, it might have been somewhat of a look-ahead game, too. You know, obviously with Karen Crow on the horizon, have an opportunity to win the district outright, they might have kind of looked past Northside a little bit. And, you know, I think at one point in the third quarter, it was a 27-24 game before Westgate ended up scoring 30 unanswered points. So I would think that Westgate would come out more ready to play against Karen Crow, obviously, with what's on the line for them. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Karen Crow can slow down a Westgate offense that has a lot of playmakers. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Kayshawn Boutte has been playing as well recently as he has played the entire year. Against Northside, he had, I think, 2 touchdowns. 70 yards on the ground, over 100 receiving. And then, you know, their running game has really improved, not only with Kayshawn, but with Kevion Sokas as well. He's really stepped up for them. Brendan Landry has also been a really pleasant surprise at the quarterback position. He was once their number 3 quarterback. But I'll be interested to see how a Karen Crow secondary that I hold in really high regard. I mean, I was really impressed with what they did last week against STM, even in a loss, how they match up with Westgate's skill talent. So it'll be interesting. And then, of course, it'll be interesting to see how Westgate counters Karen Crow's fear. And, you know, I know we talked about it before with Karen Crow having lost Traylon Prejean. It would be difficult for them. But I thought, you know, guys like Lucas Williams gave them some really good reps against STM, Dante Darjean as well. I think both those guys did a pretty good job. So we'll see what happens next week and see which offense has more success.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun at the open-air Crow Dome. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for this 10th and final week of the regular season. Give me a handful of games, James, the ones that you're looking for that are going to have maybe the most impact for area teams as to whether they get into their playoff bracket and then where they're seated.
Well, I think one of the bigger ones to me that stands out, and it's actually the game I'll be covering on Friday, is the DeRidder-Cecilia game. I really think Cecilia needs to win this game to get themselves into the playoffs. They were, you know, in the 30s last week, and, you know, I thought if they could beat Livonia, they would really help themselves and all but lock themselves up a playoff spot, but they lost a heartbreaker last week. I think the final score was 13-7, so a tough one for Cecilia, but if they can bounce back against a DeRidder team that won a lot of games this year, but they have some losses that you kind of wonder, well, maybe Cecilia might have a chance against this team. So the Bulldogs really need to win this one, and it helps that they're at home, obviously. I also think ERAC needs to beat Abbeville. I would expect that to happen, but still, ERAC, you know, kind of on that in that 30 range right now, where a loss might knock them out. So they need to win. I also think either Crowley or St. Martinville would be really helped by winning that game. They're playing each other at the district. It's not a district championship game, but if St. Martinville wins, they would clinch at least a share of the district championship if they won. And I think I wouldn't want to say that it's you know, loser is out type of thing, but I do think the winner helps themselves out a lot. And then also, you know, Lafayette High, they struggled as of late in district play, but they gave Sam Houston a really hard-fought game last week. They, you know, I think at one point were even leading that game in the fourth quarter. If they were able to upset Acadiana, and keep in mind, Acadiana is going for their first undefeated regular season since 1984, which would be, it's kind of crazy to think that hasn't happened since the 80s, considering all the success Acadiana has had. So they have plenty to play for, but if Lafayette High can find a way to win that game, then maybe they can sneak into the playoffs as well. So all of those games, I think, will have playoff implications. You know, and there are some other ones too that I'm not even mentioning, but those are the ones that kind of stick out to me.
Absolutely, helping us to canvas the area. He is James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. James, before we let you go, what else are you working on this week? So leading up to all these games, whether it's high school football or something else that people would care about, let them know it's coming to your byline.
Well, I have my Super 10 ranking for this week. Not a lot of change to that with most teams winning, but that will be coming out later today. Also, the state volleyball playoff standings came out today. So we'll have a story on that, kind of getting some thoughts from coaches from some of the elite programs around the area about their playoff draws. And then, of course, you know, entering Thursday and Friday, we'll have some more high school football coverage from week 10. And then going into next week as well, once the state volleyball tournament starts in Kenner at the Pontchartrain Training Center, we'll have coverage of that. So a lot coming down the pipe in the next couple weeks.
Per the usual, you were awesome, and we appreciate you. James, enjoy the rest of your week. I'll tell you this, one bit of good news, you and I won't go to another homecoming game this fall. That's not bad.
Right, yes, I can appreciate that. I will take senior night stuff over homecoming, I would think.
Just out here finding bright sides. Can you blame me? But I am looking forward to the high school football playoffs. We are getting oh so close. We'll talk a little more about PowerPoints, the rankings, and then our Delta Media Station games that are coming up when we have our football night in Acadiana regular season finale. Don't forget the pregame show, myself, RP3. It runs from 6 to 6:30. It'll take you into STM North Vermilion this Friday afternoon. And then Friday late evening, sometime when Danny Jones, Goose, Sam and company are done with the Cougars, we'll have the postgame edition of Football Night in Acadiana starring the famous Clint D. And if you want even more information, you always should visit our website. Great feature stories on all of these programs that we frequent on the program. The website, of course, 1037thegame.com. I got to put a bow on what's been a wacky day. I'll do that when we return. It's not just the fact that LSU-Bama week is upon us. Donald Trump is coming. Michael Divinity is not. I've also got some thoughts on the NFL and a pretty weird week 9 that I know will culminate at the end of this show, heading into Monday Night Football. The bottom line, you shouldn't go anywhere. We'll take a brief timeout, and then we're right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. This is how we do it. It's how it's been done with B2BS all fall long. We give you 2.5 hours of the good stuff, and then we transition directly into Monday Night Football tonight. But then the next, 7 or 8 minutes, we'll bring you to the pregame show. And then right after 7:10 p.m., we'll have kickoff from the Meadowlands, an NFC East bout. Cowboys at Giants. How about them Cowboys being 7-point favorites? It's a game that I think has intrigue again for gambling / fantasy purposes. When it comes to reality football and the standings, I don't know. The G-men are 2-6. This is probably more about Danny Dimes and the development of rookie quarterback Daniel Jones. On the Cowboys side, yes, greater implications. They're 4-3. They're trying to build off a win over the Eagles, and they're trying to find a way into the NFC playoffs. So tonight means a good bit for the NFL. And I want to end the show with chatter about the National Football League. I promise I'll get right back to that. But I do want to reprise the storylines of the day. It's kind of bizarre. In fact, it's more than just kind of bizarre. When you really break it down, it's downright bat bleep crazy and nutty that this year is Bama week. And yet, I mean, resoundingly, the biggest topics on our table is who's going to be in attendance. And for LSU, we learned earlier today, leading sack getter on this 2019 season, a guy that was not just good, at times great, marvelous against Auburn, Michael Divinity, out. And for a lot longer than just this game. This ain't an injury thing. This is a pack your stuff and go thing. Coach Ed Orgeron saying today that he is no longer with the team. It's being termed as a coach's decision. Orgeron mentioned that he's leaving for personal reasons. All that is great coach and politics behind the scenes talk for. You're no longer welcome here. Again, we've covered this topic chapter and verse fully today, but it still is going to leave a void. And maybe LSU, Orgeron, Aranda, maybe they feel as if they have to level the playing field, right? After all, Alabama's given up Dylan Moses and so many of their defensive studs, mostly guys that were injured before the season. But we enter Bama week, and big storyline, part one on a Monday, gone pecan. And this happened right in the middle of this two-week respite between LSU beating Auburn and LSU traveling to Bama, it's just strange. Again, I'll repeat that from our 4 o'clock hour. It's just strange. You didn't take care of this house cleaning business last week. Perhaps something went down this weekend that kind of forced your hand, and well, then you just had to take action. Don't know. Wasn't there, and they're not really saying. I'm not going to fault Ogeron, by the by, for not being transparent on this one. He doesn't really owe us that right now. But suddenly, this defense owes it to themselves to really go next man up and regroup. And so what do you do? I think that immediately you feel good about the fact that Divinity, who's been playing mostly outside, occasionally has been an inside backer this season. You feel really good about the fact that Jacob Phillips, along with Patrick Queen, are manning that spot. At times, they're doing it at all SEC capacity. So you're good inside. On one side, you've got Caleb on Chaseaux. His productivity can go up a notch or two just for my 2 cents. But I do think that you've got a starter there that you don't have to worry about any kind of re-plug and play there. On Divinity's side, you're going down the line. And that's just the reality of it. Ray Thornton, Andre Anthony, I look at it like this. Last year, LSU got the chance to start Braden Fehoko, Rashard Lawrence, and they felt rejuvenated. They've got those guys again this year. All that's great. Think back to 2017. LSU was trotting out Greg Gilmore, Frank Heron, Christian Lackator, if memory serves. My point is, they were going to redshirt seniors. Typically, when LSU is going to guys who've been lapped on the depth chart, it ain't good. There's a reason they've been lapped. Now, they still can give you something, but they just aren't to the same caliber as the guy, obviously, that beat them out. That's kind of what's happening here. And the book on these two, Thornton's usually been a little better in terms of stopping the run, whereas Anthony is more of your guy that you'd plug in and just say, go rush the passer. So depending on your situation, whether or not it's Jones or Tagovailoa at quarterback, that lets you kind of take your cue a little bit on how you replace Michael Divinity. But certainly that's not a fun storyline on a Monday for any LSU fan. The other one that'll get a lot more attention nationwide and I guess even worldwide, POTUS plans to attend this ball game. That to me is absolutely insane. It's not insane he'd want to go, and it's not insane that he will go. It's insane as somebody who will be traveling to that game. I'm trying to conjure up how the hell I'm going to get within city limits of T-Town, much less in to Bryant Denny Stadium. It's going to be one of the most packed epicenters of football that we've had in, I don't know, 8 years since they did this thing last time with undefeated teams, game of the century implications. That plus the president is coming, and we'll see. This is low-hanging fruit. I don't care. Guess we'll see if he can make Alabama great again. You know, they lose to Clemson one season for the ship, and now they need the president to come make them whole. So, whew. Can hardly even get past those storylines on a Monday, but they're awfully, awfully big. All right, I don't have a lot of time left. I did mention I wanted to get to the NFL. This will tie you into the Week 9 finale. Cowboys at Giants. We had some surprise wins, and they almost all came from teams at home. And I'll start to, I guess, go down the line here, because I don't know if any of us thought the Chiefs would hold serve and beat the Vikings without Pat Mahomes. They did. I watched every second of that game. It was wildly entertaining. But Matt Moore, the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill, Damian Williams, Travis Kelce, they did just enough to beat what was an incredibly hot Vikings team. So there's a road team that maybe not all of us thought would win, and they did. We could probably say the same thing about the Chargers beating the Pack by 15 on the West Coast. And then last night, I definitely didn't see this coming. I'd have lost a lot of money if I still shelled out the Bucks. Patriots lose their first game of the season 37-20 at Baltimore. And I'll give you at least one more. Home team we didn't expect. The Dolphins got their first win of the season beating the Jets at home. And so now there's only one undefeated team left in the game, and it's the 8-0 49ers. Guess we just can't underestimate home field advantage. We'll see if that goes the Giants' way tonight. Boy, I'd bet against it, but I've been wrong before. Got to thank our guests. We loved having them on, and we loved having you with us. So enjoy your Monday Night Football. For Clint, I'm Ben, and you've been listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.